From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Wow, it's so exciting to be here in Washington, D.C., the site of Donald Trump's second inauguration. Historic because first time since Grover Cleveland, a president lost, and then wins again. Teddy Roosevelt didn't pull it off, but Donald Trump will. And he's at St. John's Church right now. Vice President Vance, as scheduled, beat him there. They're running about a half hour off schedule. And then we're going to see the president go out, and we're going to see the pomp and circumstances surrounding with this event. And he's going to get inaugurated. And then there's going to be a series of balls tonight. And in between, a lot of executive action, a lot of executive orders, and a lot of movement just about everywhere. Very few people are better than to talk to about all this, including the inaugural address than an outstanding speechwriter himself, Mark Thiessen, for George W. Bush, now Washington Post columnist, Fox News contributor, and a fellow at the at AEI, and host of his own podcast, What the Hell is Going On? So what the hell is going on, Mark?
What the hell is going on? We're outdoors. If I had known you were doing this podcast outdoors, I would have never come. The president of the United States is doing the indoors, the inaugural address, but you do your radio show outdoors. What the hell is going on, Brian?
Right. If you're watching on the stream now, so you go to the app, you click on watch, and just go until you get radio. You're seeing this. This is mesh. But it's kind of cool.
And the wind is blowing.
Right.
And but you've discovered your love of space heaters, though, I see.
Oh, yes. You can see that on Twitter.
And I've discovered my love of moisturizer.
Right,
so there
absolutely.
You go.
Absolutely. So there you go. So Mark, it's pretty exciting. We did get an indication of what the president's going to be talking about. First off, before I get to the speech, your take on everything so far, and just kind of set up what's going on in your mind today.
Well, first of all, what strikes me is how different this is from 2017. So, I mean, first the venue, obviously. He's not doing it outdoors. He's doing it in the rotunda. But beyond that, this time last year, there were riots in Washington. They set a limousine on fire. There were people walking around in those pink hats whose name we will not describe on family radio. And they were chanting, "Not my president." The difference was that
Madonna capped it off.
And Madonna wanted to blow it up. Yeah, she wanted to blow up the White House. And the difference is that Donald Trump didn't win the popular vote in 2016. He was seen as just having sort of been an accidental president by the left. And so they started the resistance and they started the investigations and they started all the machinations. And 8 years later, he's defeated all of that. It's all gotten. He's starting this presidency now. There's no Mueller probe. There's no Russia. There's no investigations. And the Democrats are actually talking about working with him. You know, you got Fetterman out there who's reaching out across the aisle. Even Schumer said that he'd work with him on areas of agreement. So Trump has something that he never got the first time, which is a political honeymoon.
Right.
He's got a chance to unite the country and take the country forward in a positive way. And so the big question is he going to seize that in his speech? Is he going to seize that in his first days? Is he going to try and use this moment where he's got enormous popularity, enormous approval going in, momentum going in from a massive popular vote victory? Is he going to seize that and use that to bring the country together?
I think he will. I mean, it reminds me a little of Obama, except we had a financial crisis simultaneously.
Yeah.
And by the way, George Bush class act the whole way, and that was never an issue. But that's when people thought there was great hope. But they also saw, man, we got a huge challenge. The car company's collapsing and everything else, and we also got that term TARP.
Yep.
That is still controversial today. So I am encouraged about the opportunity because almost everybody says things have to change. We got to start bulking up our military-industrial complex that Eisenhower told us to fear. We got to understand that there's a huge challenge in Eastern Europe, regardless of what you think. And there's an ongoing hostage crisis in the Middle East, in Israel, which is in the middle of phase one. It'll be 42 days at any moment. That could ignite, along with Iran, that needs to be addressed. And there's a short window there. I want you to hear what Caroline Leavitt said last night. Cut one.
You're going to hear President Trump talk about how we are entering a golden age of America and how Americans' hope can be restored in this great nation. You'll hear President Trump talk about the reality of the world that we are living in, the border invasion that has turned every state in this country into a border state. You'll hear him talk about the dire economic situation that many American households have found themselves in because of the Biden administration's policies. Then you'll hear him talk about his plan, his executive action on day one to fix these problems that have been plaguing the American people over the past 4 years. And I think after hearing his speech tomorrow, Americans are going to feel a renewed sense of hope and optimism. And you're already feeling that in the city throughout this weekend.
It is tomorrow's today, and here's a quote. I got three cuts from his speech, and your speechwriter, Mark. He says, I return to the presidency confident and optimistic that we are at the start of a thrilling new era of national success. A tide of change is sweeping the country. Today, I will sign a series of historic executive orders. With these actions, we will begin the complete restoration of America and the revolution of common sense. I think you'd love that.
Yep.
My message to America today is that it is time for us to once again act with courage, vigor, and the vitality of history's greatest civilization.
I love it. I love it. So we've gone from 8 years ago, American carnage, to a golden age of America. I think that that's it. And, you know, what's interesting is that the first inaugural speech was criticized for being too dark. And there was a lot of darkness in the country, and there were reasons why he said those things. He was describing what was wrong with the country. The irony is that the situation he's inheriting now is actually worse than it was in 2017. We got this historic inflation. You've got wars raging around the world. You've got all these catastrophes having the border crisis.
You just had a terror attack 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. But now it's a message of optimism because people think he can fix it. What I'm hoping is that he's going to come out of the box quickly and start delivering for the American people. I think it's great that he's taking a positive, hopeful outlook.
Were a little disappointed that they got indoors and there was a hundred thousand people going to show up.
Yeah.
Walking through the town, and now they're not going to really have a chance to see him. My analogy is really like the Super Bowl, in that you don't really think you're going to see the coach or the quarterback walking around the streets. You know you're going to go to the game, but you're not going to interact with them. There was a sense that being here with the other fans, they're not voters. You realize they're fans.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, that's the guy I voted for. That's a Democrat or Republican. They're like, that's the guy I've been with, watched, and have seen him be here. I feel like they wanted to be a sense of community.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some disappointment in that. I mean, I was on a plane coming back from Rhode Island on Sunday, and everybody filled with MAGA hats and everything like that. And people spend a lot of money to, like, get hotels and, you know, fly out here, and they wanted to see it. So, you know, it's not done on purpose to disenfranchise them from the event, but it is a disappointment for some
people. All right, so there's no doubt about it. I don't want to take up too much because I want two equal segments, but a couple of things that are pretty apparent. Joe Biden's come out with some preemptive pardons, and it is Anthony Fauci, everybody who served on the January 6th committee, including Liz Cheney, and it is General Milley. So Anthony,
what
Fauci
crime did they commit? What are they being pardoned for?
They're afraid of them being targeted with the next regime. So they're giving. I've never heard of preventive pardons.
It's never been done. It's like, you know, Biden gave that interview the other day where he said, you know, we need to protect the guardrails of our democracy. And that's what we're worried about. This is destroying the guardrails of our democracy. A preemptive pardon? For what? What crime is he pardoning them for? There's no crime. He doesn't even specify. You're supposed to specify something in the pardon order of what they actually did. So, you know, by that definition, Trump can just go off and pardon his entire cabinet, his entire administration, preemptively.
And this could start another ridiculous trend.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And maybe they could go start knocking off liquor stores.
Yeah.
Maybe this doesn't
matter.
Go. Yeah. He said Biden explained that he was issuing the pardons not because of any wrongdoing by those included, but to protect them after they had served their country. His decision comes after Trump had repeatedly threatened them. Quote, these public servants have served our nation with honor and distinction and do not deserve to be the targets of this. General Milley says he was grateful for it. And we don't know what Fauci thinks about it. He says, I'm deeply grateful. After 43 years of faithful service in uniform to our nation, protecting and defending the Constitution, I do not wish to spend whatever days remain the Lord grants me fighting those who unjustly might seek retribution for perceived slights.
You know what? I don't see there's any evidence that Trump was actually going to go after any of these people. I mean, everyone, you know, thought that he was going to go after Hillary in 2017. And he and Obama didn't preemptively pardon her in any way, and he didn't. He said he was focused on. He said this time his revenge is going to be a success. I don't see any evidence that Donald, both in historically and how he's handled things, he never prosecuted Hillary. He never did anything to her. So why would he do that to any of them? He's got bigger things to do. He's got a big agenda to get to. It's just amazing. You said that they're a half hour behind. We can't risk another half hour of a Biden presidency. Yeah, yeah. We got to get that oath taken as quickly as possible and end this thing.
And Mark, I think we're all expecting a James Biden pardon at some point.
I'm sure,
because you know what he was up to. If you read James Comer's book, especially. So we're looking at a split screen of right now at St. John's Church, as well as the path they'll take as President Trump will make his car ride with Joe Biden, limo ride, in order to be sworn in. And that very, very great moment for America, the smooth transition of power.
Yep.
When we come back, what are the chances of Donald Trump beginning to get his confirmations, to get his cabinet intact? News about one in particular that could be in place as early as today. Mark Thiessen, my guest. Ben Domenech at the bottom of the hour. We're at 101 Constitution Avenue in Washington, D.C., historic inauguration of the 47th President of the United States, President-elect, for now, Donald Trump.
Live from Washington, D.C., for the inauguration of Donald J. Trump, it's Brian Kilmeade. Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, The Menendez Brothers, Monsters or Misunderstood.
We have evolved to understanding that this kind of stuff can happen.
Judge Jeanine Pirro and a panel of experts break down the Menendez Brothers' new fight for freedom, and their defense attorney explains why he's optimistic he can clear their names.
Are these convicted killers monsters or just misunderstood?
Listen and follow at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Live from Washington, D.C., for the inauguration of Donald J. Trump, it's Brian Kilmeade.
All these journalists are like, Congresswoman, are you going to the inauguration? Congresswoman, are you going to the inauguration? Are you going to the inauguration? Let me make myself clear. I don't celebrate rapists. So, no, I'm not going to the inauguration tomorrow.
So, by the way, you better queue up a defamation suit. President's not been accused of rape. No one thinks he's a rapist. That was a civil suit with an outcome that's being still in dispute. Mark Thiessen, my guest. Mark, what a dumb, tone-deaf, horrible statement to make.
Well, first of all, do you really believe that everybody's asking her, are you going to the inauguration? It's like all of Washington is waiting with bated breath to see if AOC is at the inauguration. Give me a break. This woman is so full of herself. And she's never been less relevant.
No, I hear you. Today is going to be a busy day for the President of the United States, who's now done with the St. John's Church service, along with the Vice President, is going to make his way now to the Capitol building, where he's going to be sworn in with a limited number of crowds. But in terms of executive orders, he could have up to 200 executive orders and executive actions. A lot of it has to do with the border. We could see military on our border as early as today.
That would be awesome. I mean, just let the deportations begin. There was a New York Times poll that shows something like 83% or something like that want to deport people who are criminal migrants. 63% want to deport all the people who came in the last 4 years, and even 55% want to deport all illegal migrants. But there's still support, 62% support for the Dreamers. Which is exactly where Donald Trump is. You know, he wants to let the Dreamers stay, but you can't do it. You can't do those kinds of things until you actually get control of the border and get rid of the people who came in here.
But he's going to be signing a whole chock full of ones. This is going to be extremely organized. Also, the border is going to start. They're going to start building it today with technology at the border. Is going to be great. They're also going to declare those cartels foreign terrorist organizations.
That's awesome.
FTOs allows them to get aggressive.
Yep, absolutely. And Mexico's got to crack down on them and stop the fentanyl coming across our borders. It's not just going to be terrorists they're dealing with. They might be dealing with military force against some of those cartels.
Right. So Steve Miller also briefed Republicans on this and a few select reporters, including our own Bill Malusian. He is going to end catch and release, declare a national border emergency, direct the U.S. military, pause all offshore and wind leases, which have been an abomination. And kill. We don't have any birds left. I think they're all dying. They terminate the electric vehicle mandate. For those who think he's going to bow to Elon Musk, maybe they should read that one again. Abolish the New Green Deal, what's left. I think they got a few billion left. withdraw from the Paris Climate Exchange and delay U.S. TikTok ban.
Yeah, so I was just at Hertz rental car in Maine, Portland, Maine, and they had a sign, electric vehicles, $15 a day. No one wants these things, literally. And if you do rent them, if you're a sucker enough that you take the deal, they like offer you like, you know, pennies on the dollar to buy the car from them because they're so desperate to get rid of these things. So the only way you can get them is sold as a mandate, and we're going to get rid of that, thank God.
Also, just to do some news, right away, a lawsuit is going to be filed as soon as the president takes his hand off the Bible against the formation of DOGE on the Transparency Act. I think they're going to say you got to formally either put these guys on the cabinet. You can't go do this on the side. I'm not a lawyer, but just goes to show you, they want accountability in government, and now they're pushing back on accountability in government.
Last I checked, we've got something called the First Amendment, which allows people to come together as free citizens and form a committee and to just investigate, you know, the federal government and come up with a recommendation. The DOGE has no power. It's just a bunch of people who are going to be looking, scrubbing through the federal government and federal budget and looking for ways to cut efficiency. And it would tell you everything you need to know about the fact that the left wants to sue them to stop them from doing that.
So what I found out over the years, and you might have too, that people would say things about Trump that just blatantly weren't true. They don't do this thing on a daily basis or watch other channels. Suddenly people are saying, is he such a fascist, yet he's kidding around with Barack Obama? Didn't you call him a fascist and Hitler? And then they see Biden recommending him, having some fun, and saying nice things about him at the White House. Among the people who feel they were duped, Charlemagne the God, cut 9.
I never called Donald Trump a fascist based off anything I heard from Democrats. I said that because of things I heard come out of Donald Trump's mouth, right? But guess what? I don't even know if I believe it anymore. Only because of how they're acting. I'm like, well, maybe it ain't that much of a threat.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
They lied to you.
And by the way, that don't change my vote. I would have still voted for the vice president.
When I was with him, he had his book out, he was saying things. I'm like, where'd you hear that? What are you talking about? And we had Nelly, who's going to be getting blowback, and Snoop Dogg getting blowback for performing here. And they're both standing strong and saying, I'm still doing it. It's for the President of the United States. And for Nelly, he said, I'm sorry. Who's the one who said, when Donald Trump said, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black?
Yeah.
He goes, I'm sorry. Oh, I got that wrong, being sarcastic. That was the other guy. Yes. So I think there's some pushback on high profile and everyday Americans.
So here's the thing. The whole fascist line and the whole, you know, Trump is a Nazi and democracy is in danger and all the rest of that. That was like the last gasp of the lawfare and the attacks on Trump. I mean, he survived the Mueller probe, the Russia collusion thing. He survived 2 impeachments. He survived 93 criminal charges against him at the federal, state, and local level. I mean, Charles Manson had 10. You know, and he defeated it all. He's defeated it all. They called him a fascist. 2 assassination attempts. Everything they tried to throw at him, either directly or indirectly, has just bounced off of him. And he's now taking the oath of office inside the Capitol Rotunda. It's over. He's going to have a normal presidency. He's going to do things to make this country great again. And you've lost. You've absolutely lost.
It looks like Rubio could get confirmed as early as today, almost everyone says.
Yep.
And then it could be Radcliffe. And then it could be Kristi Noem. That's how impressive she was.
Yep.
And then they're saying Pete Hegseth. I was told by Senator Roger Wicker on Saturday night, we'll put it up right away. If you're going to filibuster, we'll get through it in one day. Your thoughts?
Well, Pete Hegseth has more executive experience than Barack Obama when he was president.
Great point. And war experience, too.
So, I mean, you know, I think that there's a good chance that Pete's going to be confirmed. There might be a few other bumps in the road coming up, but probably won't be him.
Tulsi Gabbard, RFK Jr., that's going to be must see viewing.
Yes,
we're
going to have to do well.
Mark, I couldn't be happier to have you here today, especially on a historic day with your perspective and your sarcasm. Yet complaining about the outdoor, being outdoors and indoor, an indoor inauguration. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Live from our nation's capital for the inauguration of Donald J. Trump, you're with Brian Kilmeade.
The American people have given us their trust, and in return, we're going to give them the best first day, the biggest first week, and the most extraordinary first 100 days of any presidency in American history. To implement this historic agenda, I've assembled an all-star cabinet of patriots and visionaries and reformers who will fight for America, and together we will win, win, win for America.
And that is President of the United States yesterday in front of 20,000 at Capital One Arena right here in Washington, D.C., and he was winning, 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 which the Wizards, ironically, don't do, who play there, but the Caps do. Ben Domenech joins us now, Fox News contributor, and does everything else, Ben Domenech podcast. So, Ben, so far we're a little bit behind. I don't think it's a big deal. The vice president was supposed to be at the church around 9. He was there 9:30 and vice versa. So he's moving 8:30, rather. And President Trump has left the Blair House after going through the service. Now they're in the limo, and they're heading to the Capitol.
Yeah, I think this is going to be an interesting inauguration for a number of reasons. But obviously, Brian, you know, we're dealing with a situation that we haven't had since 1985 with this moving inside. And you know, anticipate that there are going to be some hiccups along the way, just in terms of the logistics and the quick change that they had to make given the freezing weather and the like. The other thing, Brian, of course, is that, you know, I think a lot of the country is going to be paying attention to this from the perspective of, you know, what message is Donald Trump going to be sending in this inaugural that is perhaps different from the one that he sent in 2017, different
right.
perhaps than the message that he sent last night at that victory rally. And I think, you know, from my perspective, the real question is his message going to be, come on in for the big win? Even if you weren't someone who voted for me, I'm actually a more unifying figure than Joe Biden was. He promised to bring normalcy and stability and unification after a chaotic period, and then he completely failed to do so. He made things much worse. I'm actually the answer now. And I think that the American people are really open to that. Now, how long that remains their attitude, we'll have to see in the coming weeks.
A couple of things. Just so you know, our audience just heard, I went through Mark Thiessen, some of the excerpts they've released already about the inaugural address from President Trump. I return more confident, optimistic, that we're at the start of a thrilling new era. Another cut, I will assign a series of historic executive orders. These actually will begin to complete the restoration of America. Instead of talking about how bad it is, how much better it's going to get, my message to America today is that it's time for us to once again act with courage, vigor, and the vitality of history's greatest civilization. Mm-hmm. Love that line. Mm-hmm. I love the spirit of it. And there's no sense in saying how bad things are anymore, because now it's your ball.
Yeah.
This is your game. And you got to, you know, use any sports analogy you want. It's no sense of saying, look at the mess I had.
Well, he's in a very different situation now, Brian, in so many different respects. And one of the big differences, I think, is that he has a Republican Party that is unified around his message and unified around what he wants to do. You know, certainly in 2016, you did not have that. They were shocked that he won. There was a lot of opposition on Capitol Hill back then. Now I think that you have a different leadership team and a different group of people up there, including even a lot of new Democrats who were elected after he left office, who
right.
I think are a lot more open to working with him than Democrats ever were in his first term. The possibility of being able to achieve a lot of these things is a lot higher.
Would you say the Lake and Riley Act is a positive result?
It's just the first of one of, I think there are going to be several other indications of where we go.
Democrats
from here.
Voted for
Lake and Riley, obviously, that act was something that was supported by an enormous number of Democrats on the House side. And then you had Democrats who were headed into critical midterm elections who all gravitated toward it, including, you know, not just people like John Ossoff in Georgia, which you would maybe expect that, not just John Fetterman, but people, including Gary Peters, who was literally the head of the Democratic Senatorial Committee this past time around from Michigan, who you know, was supportive of it and has been supportive, indicating his early support for a number of the president's cabinet nominees. So I think that that's going to be something
right.
to watch going forward. How much is he able to successfully bridge the divide and be able to work across some of these partisan lines in ways that I think we never have seen him be able to do in the past?
So Dave Chappelle was on SNL. We've been so busy, I'm sure you didn't watch it. But
I actually did watch some of it. It was disappointing.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he seemed to wing it.
Yeah.
Basically sat there smoking for 30 minutes. But this is what he said, what he wished for Trump. Cut 10.
The presidency is no place for petty people. So Donald Trump, I know you watch the show. Man, remember, whether people voted for you or not, they're all counting on you. Whether they like you or not, they're all counting on you. The whole world is counting on you. I mean this when I say this. Good luck. Please do better next time. Please, all of us, do better next time.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that, too. I think that, you know, that's something that's consistent with Chappelle's approach over the last couple of years. But one thing that I think is going to be critical about this is the American people voted to have our laws enforced when it came to the border and immigration. They voted to have someone who was going to come in and reverse the policies of the Biden administration that led to millions of people pouring across the border, that led to the kind of criminal activity that we've seen in recent years. And we do not want that as a people or as a nation. What are they going to do when he starts actually enforcing the law? When he starts actually coming down?
Some of the video is going to be tough.
Reality. And I think it's going to be tough.
Well, when you see the video of a family being deported, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's going to send a message to stop the next thousands of families for coming across. It's not going to be worth mortgaging your house in order to get the American dream because the window is closing. Well, it's closed. Joe Biden's gone. What they're finding, and I don't have numbers on this yet, is that people are self-deporting because they know what's coming.
Yeah, and I think that that's actually the healthiest way that this works is for people who, you know, understand that there's going to be a difference in terms of enforcing the law, actually, you know, anticipating it and reacting accordingly. But the other thing, Brian, is he faces so many challenges around the world. He faces situations in terms of the fall of Syria. He faces situations in terms of the coup in South Korea. He faces situations in terms of China's encroaching influence, the Ukraine war, the situation regarding Israel and Gaza. He faces so many different challenges. And, of course, that includes Mexico, where one of these executive orders is going to actually name these cartels finally as terrorist institutions, okay? That means there's a whole series of things that follow from that, including being able to arrest people who are here, who are profiting from cartels and their activity when it comes to human trafficking, fentanyl, everything else that we've seen them doing.
Also the bank records.
Exactly, and being able to seize those things and actually have active, you know, actions that we can take in reaction to that. The Mexican authorities, including their new president, Claudia Sheinbaum, they are not going to go along with that easily. There's going to be reaction to it, but it's exactly the kind of policy that we need to have in place if we're going to take these cartels seriously as a threat.
Right, but we do have to get the drilling going in the Gulf of America.
Yes.
You know that too.
Yes.
All right, so I want to move. I want to end the last block with you, TikTok, but I want to talk now about the hostage swap. So the three hostages got out yesterday. We're supposed to have two Americans within the 42 days, 33 hostages overall, but for thousands of prisoners, many with life sentences. Here's Mike Waltz, Cut 14.
What we're talking about here is making sure that Hamas is destroyed as a terrorist organization. Hamas is no different than ISIS or Al-Qaeda or any of the worst that has so brutalized the Middle East over the years. And what we have made clear to Bibi Netanyahu, to his government, and I want the Israeli people to hear me loud and clear, if Hamas reneges on this deal, if Hamas backs out, moves the goalpost, what have you, we will support Israel in doing what it has to do.
And that's different, making sure that people know. But Hamas can never rule Gaza again. What is your thought? Give me your forensics on this.
My feeling on this is that, look, this is not a great deal. It needs to be the preface to additional deals if it's going to improve. And I think it is the intent of this administration to do that. But it's also a situation where I think we have to trust with confidence that the Israelis know what's in their best interest and that that interest is something that is, you know, part of our, you know, alliance in a way that we need to, you know, support them and to be, you know, full bore in doing so because they understand what's necessary in order to prevent that kind of Hamas rule of Gaza going forward and to protect the security of their people, which is in America's interest.
Right. And when you see these people out, it's unimaginable hell that they've lived through. One was missing three fingers as she got out. Could have happened on the first day. They also gave him a to-go bag, which was pictures of what they look like in captivity, which is just an in-your-face. And they were ridiculed as they left, evidently, in their transportation, mode of transportation over to the border. We know three stages. This stage one is about releasing women, elderly, and the sick and wounded. The second phase is the remaining live hostages and males. And the third stage is about the bodies. On day 16 of this stage, they start negotiating a final phase. So I always think that Netanyahu is three steps ahead of me.
Yeah.
So whatever happens, I know that he's thought it through. Mm-hmm. And number one is you get some hostages out for the humanitarian purposes. But my sense is we're going to watch. They are going to watch exactly where the prisoners go, how they interact and where they go.
Yeah.
The hostages might be able to tell them some things about what goes on underneath in those tunnels. And I also think that the big picture is Iran, and we have a window as a country to take out a 40-year nemesis that is unbelievably exposed right now. And that's what Trump's got to think about perhaps first.
Yeah, I think that that's going to be priority number one, and especially for Marco Rubio, I think, when it comes to his role as Secretary of State, to look at that situation and see how they can do that in a way that is going to both benefit our interests and be something that's consistent with President Trump's overall approach, which is not wanting to get sucked into foreign conflicts to a greater degree than is required by the American interest.
I see Donald Trump's family has now arrived at the Capitol at Capitol Hill. They're going to be going inside. Ben, it's hard to get tickets, but I'm pretty sure his family gets the best seats in the house.
They'll be fine.
And I actually was texting with the president today, and I said, I'm happy for you, but I'm happier for your family because they've been through a lot. They've been through a lot, especially when you look at Eric and Donald trying to keep a business together when everyone's saying it's not good business to do business with the Trumps, and they're going after his finances, putting a monitor in his building, making the government approve what he does.
You know, I think we shouldn't forget how much of a near thing this was when it came to this election deciding the entire future for the Trumps and their family, everything that they've worked for over the course of their lives. And, you know, the indication from, you know, people like Jack Smith that, oh, yeah, we were going to send you to jail if you didn't win an election. First off, I think that's fundamentally an extremely bizarre and disturbing thing that shouldn't happen in America. We shouldn't have the outcome of elections determine whether you go to jail or not. But it's also a situation where I think they have had their eyes opened about so many things about Washington. They showed up here in 2016, 2017 without really knowing the way that this town worked, without understanding politics. His understanding of it now is second to none, and I think that his capabilities as such are going to be a lot more attuned to what is achievable with the kind of majority that he has on Capitol Hill.
So, yeah, it's really interesting because it's so important now for Kash Patel to get in there and start working and get them to start fighting crime. And, you know, he's already making a difference when the FBI preemptively dispatched their DEI program.
Yes.
Really? Because we saw maybe a product of the DEI program after the New Orleans attacks.
Yes, we did.
When we see a agent with a nose ring come out and say, all I know for sure is no terror attack.
Yeah, no.
Who would say that?
No, it's absurd. And look, we've had America's fed up with this stuff. They're fed up with people who are incapable of doing their jobs. And the attitude towards all these DEI programs would be different if they had actually promoted people who could do their jobs. Unfortunately, you know, for years we've seen the opposite. And look, I'm very hopeful and optimistic about this presidency, but we should not underestimate the degree to which he's about to confront a number of serious problems that are going to require serious answers. And those are not going to be easy challenges.
Just so you know, within the last hour, Joe Biden has pardoned Anthony Fauci, Mark Milley, Liz Cheney, and some others on the J6 committee.
Yes.
Preemptively, that's the first time in history. So that means they can go knock off a liquor store and we can't put them in jail. Well, I'm going to talk about that and TikTok when we come back with Ben Domenech, who for the first time makes me feel underdressed on my own radio show. Doesn't he look great? Look at how good he looks.
Oh,
back in a moment.
Live from our nation's capital for the inauguration of Donald J. Trump, you're with Brian Kilmeade. From Constitution Avenue in our nation's capital for the inauguration of President Donald J. Trump, it's Brian Kilmeade.
As of today, TikTok is back. And frankly, we have no choice. We have to save it a lot of jobs. We don't want to give our business to China. We don't want to give our business to other people. They're worth some crazy number. So I said, I'll approve, but let the United States of America own 50% of TikTok.
That is President Trump yesterday at his rally. Ben Domenech, my guest. Ben, that's not going to work.
It's not going to work.
They got to divest. They got to sell to an American company.
So here's the thing to keep in mind. China could make billions of dollars by selling this, and yet they don't want to. What does that tell you? It tells you that they would rather have our data, access to our phones and devices of millions of Americans, rather than billions of dollars. Okay, and that just itself is an indication of the problem with this whole dynamic. I understand what the president's trying to do. He's trying to make people happy. There are legitimate people who, you know, run businesses via TikTok that have been very successful. But the problem is, this is a foreign influence operation. It is a foreign, operation that is designed to steal America's data
and
to monitor us.
The news feed is going to be very pro-China,
yes,
anti-American, subtly,
constantly,
and anti-Semitic, anti-Israeli.
Exactly. And so, look, we can't have that happen. And so, ideally, this would be a situation where China would say, we are willing to sell it to any group,
yeah,
of non-Chinese, CCP-run people. But look, you had executives who had to swear allegiance to the CCP as a condition of their employment, including Americans, by the way. And that's something that is just, you can't have that here in America. It's not acceptable.
In case you don't know, a short time ago, they did a preemptive pardon of Anthony Fauci, the J6 committee members, including Liz Cheney and General Mark Milley. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are, this is a travesty. And I think that, you know, it's incumbent on anybody who gets the opportunity to interview any of these people to ask if they personally lobbied for these pardons. The idea that the pardon power is used for things before you've even been accused of it is unprecedented. And to see a situation, particularly as it relates to General Milley. General Milley is public and has been public about the fact that he went around and essentially told foreign entities in the latter days of the Trump administration that he would give them a heads up if the president made a decision that he disagreed with beforehand. That's something where you can be accused of being a traitor, legitimately, okay? And the fact that you would have these pardons go out for these people, frankly, I think it's a huge mistake on their part because, one, you can't take the Fifth Amendment anymore when you're under oath. If you lie under oath, you are not protected by that. This does not go forward in terms of protecting you for something like that. So that means that for Rand Paul, for Jim Jordan, for the kind of people who are going to be hauling these folks in front of their committees going forward and asking them questions, the assumption is going to be you are guilty of something. Otherwise, why were you asking for a pardon? And I guarantee you we're going to find out that they were all lobbying for it personally from an addled president who was mentally absent.
That is going to be the biggest story. People say, well, when you get away from the presidency, a lot of times your approval improves, like George W. Bush. Got 10 seconds left. It's going to go down.
It's going to go down. I don't think that there's any way you can haul this guy out of the hole that he's dug in terms of historical appreciation.
Because he's not cognitively there,
no.
And the press covered for him, so did his staff. Ben, thanks so much. We'll check out your podcast. Always appreciate it.
Great
historic day.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. We're looking at the Capital One Arena, at least I am, because that's where the world is focused, because President Trump is going to be inaugurated today as the 47th president of the United States. We did not cover the Grover Cleveland comeback in the 1880s. I think it had a lot to do with electricity and discovery of television. I don't blame myself or our editor-in-chief at Fox News. That was Brett Baer, who's, ironically, I didn't realize when I was saying this, you're actually next to me. So I do not blame you for not covering the Cleveland story.
Yeah.
But it was a great story to come back. Teddy Roosevelt couldn't do it. But this president does do it. You just had an interaction with him.
Oh, quickly. Just a little telephone call. And all of us have like minor little moments, but on this day it was kind of interesting, and he's in good spirits and ready to go.
I mean, I get the sense it's been really since he won in November, it's slowly sinking in what he's pulled off, and then you see the world kind of coming behind him instead of separating from him. It was still a helicopter overhead, the security's through the roof, but I didn't anticipate this, that Zuckerberg, Bezos, Tim Cook, or Tim Apple, who he sometimes calls him as, would be coming together to say, how can I help?
Yeah.
You know, and if you think that Elon Musk wants to cash in his $230 million donation, he didn't get it today because one of the executive orders he's going to sign is to get rid of the electric car mandate. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know what they want, but they don't want to be left out.
Yeah, I think it's to be a part of this. And if you think about it, it's night and day to 2016, 2017, and how all of those folks and really a lot of the country reacted to Donald Trump. I mean, obviously he had tons of supporters back then, but now it's different. It's a completely different scenario. Remember, we had almost a year of the Russia investigation. That just hung over his administration, and it was a lot of defense. This is he's comfortable in his skin. He is, I think, going to get a lot done in a short time. And the question is whether Capitol Hill is going to fall in line with what his agenda is going
to
be.
I'm sure you're hearing about what he's going to do on the border. It looks like troops are going to the border. He's going to declare these cartels, international terrorist organizations, alignment, take extreme, be very aggressive with them, one of which is do what we did with Al-Qaeda. Start going into the bank accounts, financing, find out who's financing, as well as what ICE is going to be doing about picking up what we find in Aurora, Chicago, and New York.
I think it's going to be massive, and you're going to feel it right away. I think there will be this very visual lockdown of the border, and it'll be, you know, night and day as far as what we've seen. Now, the real question is whether they go after the cartels inside Mexico, you know, with special forces or special operations forces.
Like we do in Syria.
And, you know, Mike Waltz has talked about that as a very significant possibility that that, in fact, is going to happen.
Right, and anything near the Gulf of America. We don't know if that's going to happen either.
I think that's one of the orders.
I think that, yeah, that's going to happen. And I'm willing to make the adjustment. It didn't make much sense. So today, I did not know this. You would always know stuff like this. But the foreign leaders attending inauguration is unprecedented.
Yep.
And we have the Chinese vice president, Argentinian's president, who's a Trump clone, who's already produced a surplus in his country. Italian premier, who seems to be the emerging power in Europe, or at least respected power, the Georgia president and the Ecuadorian president, which I think represents the way you could do it in Central America. You can crack down on your gangs if you arrest all of them.
Yeah.
And that's what they did.
And listen, the world is watching. Everybody is watching. There's also foreign ministers from a ton of countries here. The fact that the Chinese sent the vice president is a show of respect. You know, obviously he invited President Xi, but the vice president coming is a hat tip to Donald Trump. And I think that there's going to be, you know, some outreach, maybe even a trip to China early.
He says he wants to do that, right?
Early.
But what has to be addressed, and just reported matter-of-factly, is the Chinese have infiltrated into our infrastructure. They even hacked into the Treasury Secretary's account. And our treasury, our water, our power lines, who knows what our dams are capable of. They have done this aggressively while Alejandro Mayorkas was Homeland Security Secretary. Have we even had a thought of investigating how this happened? And do we have a defense to stop it and gut it?
I don't know. I honestly think we are very vulnerable. And everybody I talk to in the cyber world says because of the lack of public-private cooperation,
right?
It's really, it's a big issue. They get attacked, you know, millions of times a day.
But why, and then yet the President Xi called, wish you luck, hey, can you leave TikTok alone? You don't mind. It's amazing. I understand it's a complicated thing at the highest level, but it's not so much we're spying on each other, which we're used to, but this type of aggressive infiltration is something that I would have to trouble holding small talk if I knew they were doing this.
Yeah.
Although it's not his problem, as of noon today, it'll be Donald Trump's problem. How he wants to handle that will be interesting.
Yeah, and I think he's going to do what Donald Trump does, which is negotiate with a firm stance on something. I think you're going to see that in Russia. I think there's going to be, if I had to guess, tougher sanctions on Putin to try to get him to the table in Ukraine. You know, I think a lot will change just by this change happening today.
I hope so. I don't think anybody wants another world war, but we shouldn't blindly just stumble into it. Just to give people an idea, what Brett, you're going to be doing on television throughout the day, talking about the images. We are seeing we got a report that the president is having tea with the Bidens. The Trump's the president-elect is having tea with the Bidens. We also saw Marco Rubio in front of the dignitaries. Now, interesting, not a surprise he's going to get confirmed, but I didn't know today. It looks like he could get confirmed today. Radcliffe could get confirmed today. What else have you heard?
Yeah, those two definitely. Radcliffe, you know, security CIA clearance before, so it's not a tough hurdle. I think Duffy could actually get out
transportation.
Today. Transportation. Kristi Noem is going to get out of committee today, Homeland Security.
Very impressive in the hearing. That's the reviews.
Yeah. Actually, there wasn't somebody that miffed a hearing. The hearing's pretty smooth from everybody. Bessent did tremendous in his Treasury.
Saw him yesterday, which was the Trump Hotel, and it was interesting. We had him on the radio for about a year, and they kept saying, along with his introduction, is a finalist to be a Treasury Secretary should Donald Trump win, and he is all in on the Trump agenda. Great personal story. But I'm going to add one other. Pete Hegseth, we had Roger Wicker on Saturday night, and he believes Hegseth's a Monday or Tuesday deal. Now, we don't hear that for sure from other places. I don't know if he's being overly optimistic. Do you think we could get a vote on Pete, and do you expect a filibuster in response?
I think it might take longer than Monday or Tuesday. I think that's optimistic, but who knows? I mean, once this thing starts rolling, I think there will be this wish to get the president who he wants. And if there's not a problem, if there's not documents that show other things that outside of the hearing, I think it's going to be okay. Some of this is literally paperwork. Like Howard Lutnick didn't get the paperwork finished by all of the authorities that produce all the background. And so just by that delay, he's getting delayed.
I think that what people should look at with the Pentagon is it's a package deal. Not only you get Pete, but you're going to get a very experienced deputy secretary and assistant secretary of state who have fill each other's gaps in terms of running an organization. That's the Cerebus CEO. I think it's Feinberg. Mm-hmm. You have a undersecretary, I believe, who's got experience in the Pentagon. So I think together they could revamp things. And I really thought it was sincere. Roger Wicker says, he wrote his little pamphlet on how to redo the Pentagon. He goes, we're going to pass an audit in a year, number one. Number two is, the more I think about it, we need someone unconventional to be able to do this, to get people's attention. Though already Pete's nomination rocked the Pentagon. Have you heard that? That used to be...
Yeah, yeah, I was there for 6.5 years. So I was always concerned that the building would close in on somebody that didn't know how it operated. But I think you're right. With the right people, he could shake it up. And more importantly, it's about the warriors, and it's the people out in the field who I think feel emboldened by this choice. At least that's the anecdotal evidence.
So I want to hear the other story that should not be a story, but President Trump seems to want to hold on to TikTok. I think it's a travesty. This is China infiltration. Congratulations on a great app, great algorithm. You have 170 million users, but you've already been banned partially or fully in 30 separate countries. This is something that no matter what they tell you about the Texas Project, you have a person who's editor-in-chief who's a member of the Chinese Communist Party, sits in both jobs. Amazing. Obviously, he can compartmentalize effectively. But here is President Trump cut 25 last night on what's he going to do with TikTok.
As of today, TikTok is back. And frankly, we have no choice. We have to save it a lot of jobs. We don't want to give our business to China. We don't want to give our business to other people. They're worth some crazy number. So I said, I'll approve, but let the United States of America own 50% of TikTok. I'm approving on behalf of the United States. So they'll have a partner, the United States, and they'll have a lot of bidders, and the United States will do what we call a joint venture. And there's no risk. We're not putting up any money. All we're doing is giving them the approval, without which they don't have anything. So I don't know. It sounds like that works. What do you think? Good? I think so. So whether you like TikTok or not, we're going to make a lot of money.
Your thoughts? That's not going to do it.
You know, I think when you ask lawmakers about this, and I think Senator Thune was asked by Bill and Dana this morning, there's a lot of hemming and hawing and saying, let's see what happens. Let's see the issues. They want to see how it all comes together. I think, he's trying to find a solution. But taking the threat out of TikTok is really what many of these lawmakers would like to do.
It's got to be sold to an American company. If they want to make billions of dollars, sell it to an American company. If they want to go dark, they can lose it. But what bothers me most, they're letting the Red Note go on the App Store. The Red Note is another mini TikTok. It's going to be a Chinese-owned entity, and there's some other app is also a Chinese-owned app. They're going to look to do it with something else. Why couldn't the App Store screen that out? Or why couldn't this legislation knock that out? Do you know?
So I don't know, but the pushback is always the First Amendment and the ability to express yourself. That you have to balance that. And what the Supreme Court said was the balance of national security threat is real. And that looking inside the fact that they can hold direct messages, the fact that they can hold data for years, is a problem potentially down the road for the U.S.
I want to, by the way, this helicopter, perfect time to road Mike Pillsbury. He knows the danger of this app. He is a China expert that the president leans on a lot and will again. By the way, Bill Clinton has just arrived. That's always cool to see the former presidents come. Cut 31.
What's going on here is if you look at the ad revenue from TikTok last year, it's almost $14 billion. So the American part of TikTok is highly profitable. So whether it's Elon Musk or Mr. Wonderful or a syndicate, taking that and expanding TikTok users, that's a financial success. The problem is how to totally cut off the connection with China, their use of TikTok as a spy tool, the dangers of all the users of TikTok unless this is cut off. So that may be coming to a head just in the next few days, because for Elon Musk or Mr. Wonderful to buy it, Laura, as you may know, it's going to take an antitrust waiver. This will be greatly expanding whoever is involved. That brings in Pam Bondi, who will become the arbitrator of what to do next.
So, and obviously the other thing that I don't think could be overstated is that the news feed. When you see the news rolling out there, when Trump goes into a trade war with China and they have their disputes, is he going to like the anti-Trump news that's going to be popping up with the next generation of young of Americans and anti-Taiwan stuff and the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel stuff? Do we want
look
them
what happened
control?
With the Osama bin Laden letter and all that that went on TikTok?
Yeah,
I agree. There's a lot of questions, and I don't think we've heard the end of it. Let me just say this: when we start our coverage at 11:30 today, it's going to be a lot less talking than you think. We're going to let the whole thing breathe.
Okay.
And we think that that's history. So when you tune in, be ready to really see what's going on
and
for
you have
yourself.
And you have to run. But what we've just seen is presidents walking in, all the dignitaries, the senators on both sides. I could only see 20 Democrats that are boycotting. So a lot different than over 100 last time.
Yeah.
And you're not boycotting. You're going to be doing
I'll
it.
I'll be there.
How many hours?
I think it's 6 hours.
6 hours
Fox
on the air.
Catheter or whatever.
Right. We're not sure. I'm sure it'll be, well, there'll be a logo on
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah, there'll be a logo. One. Yeah.
We're still on the
air,
though.
Oh,
I know. Why didn't I toss the brakes?
I don't know.
Totally unprofessional. Now I know why I'm not on the coverage. What's wrong with me? Vivek Ramaswamy's here. Brian Kilmeade Show. Back in a moment.
From Constitution Avenue in our nation's capital for the inauguration of President Donald J. Trump, it's Brian Kilmeade. Live from Washington, D.C., for the inauguration of Donald J. Trump, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Every radical and foolish executive order of the Biden administration will be repealed within hours of when I take the oath of office. Oh, you're going to have a lot of fun watching television tomorrow. Somebody said yesterday, sir, don't sign so many in one day. Let's do it over a period of weeks. I said, like hell, we're going to do it over weeks. We're going to sign them at the beginning.
And that is President Trump yesterday in front of an adoring crowd of 20,000 at the Capital One Center. Now we're seeing President Trump met with the Bidens already. Or he went to St. John's Church. It's going to make him over to Capital One Center and the Capitol building for the swearing-in ceremony. It's definitely a bifurcated celebration, different from the inaugural. Normally it would be right behind me. I'd probably have 100,000 people right over my shoulder. If you're watching on the stream, you could see it's a beautiful shot, but it's an empty shot because of the extreme temperatures, although it doesn't really seem that bad. I wonder if there's something else to that. Meanwhile, the sense here, we will watch too. We're watching President Trump. We will watch him leave. The limo's waiting for him to make him over to the swearing-in ceremony. He's going to ride in the limo, as tradition would have it, as soon as they found out with cars, with the former president, soon-to-be former President Biden. Word is, inside the Biden camp, he's been in an extremely dark, angry mood, and is very bitter that he didn't have a chance to run against Trump and the way it's done. Still has not spoken to Nancy Pelosi, even after she broke her hip. So he blames her. But the more you think about it, I mean, I'm not defending Nancy Pelosi, but she was just the last one to speak up. I mean, Schumer just wrote a big story how he begged him not to run, how if I took a secret ballot to every Democrat in the Senate, you maybe get 5 votes to stay in the race. Jack Reed, who I got something to say about this, Jack Reed, who comes out and says, when it comes to Joe Biden, if I need to see two cognitive tests and to see him do a live press conferences before I begin to think that he could run for reelection. And even he said personally that he didn't know if he could survive it. Meanwhile, the headline in the New York Times op-ed with Peter Baker is pretty interesting. And it really sums up what we've been talking about. It says, defiance is out, deference is in. Trump returns to a different Washington. He says, Trump prepares to take the oath for office. Much of the world seems to be bowing down to him, and demoralized opponents are rethinking the future. The resistance of 2017 has faded into the resignation of 2025. That's for you guys, Peter, and who I like. But he just has a little bit of Trump derangement syndrome, and your wife is off the charts angry at Trump. But a lot of people are looking forward to this. There's over 50. He's got over 50% approval rating for the first time since he started running. I think it's going to go up. They like the agenda. They like the new temper. They rallied around him when the assassination attempt happened. And you have a lot of businesses willing to invest. In fact, Tim Cook came out yesterday and made a statement that he's looking to invest right away into bringing more engineers and more Apple manufacturing back to America.
Live from our nation's capital for the inauguration of Donald J. Trump, you're with Brian Kilmeade.
You're going to see executive orders that are going to make you extremely happy, lots of them. We have to set our country on the proper course. By the time the sun sets tomorrow evening, the invasion of our borders will have come to a halt, and all the illegal border trespasses will in some form or another be on their way back home.
And that is President Trump yesterday in front of 20,000 fans talking about the executive orders. Between actions and orders, about 200 overall. I'll go through some of them, but just to give you an idea what's happening, as it's my privilege to welcome in Karl Rove. He's going to be on TV and radio throughout the day. Karl, of course, the guy he used to work for, Bush 43 in attendance. Bill Clinton, we saw him walk in. They're filling up Capitol Hill. First time since 1985, right?
Well, we had Obama. We had Obama, I think, was
indoors?
Inside. Indoors. I think he was indoors. I may be wrong.
I don't think
that.
So. I think, Karl Rove, you might be wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I might be.
We've seen a lot of people pour in. They'll do a mini parade at the Capitol One Center. Your thoughts about what we see? We're waiting for both presidents to walk out and get in a limo together. That's always pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it is a great ceremony, and it's a great part of our democracy that we can have the peaceful transition of power from one administration to another.
Yeah.
It's not something that happens routinely, and it has happened with a few assorted exceptions since the beginning of our country.
John Quincy Adams.
John Quincy.
Bit of a sore loser when he lost Andrew Jackson.
Yeah, yeah.
We also have John Adams.
Yeah, John Adams.
Jefferson,
something
bad
in the family.
Yeah.
Well, and look, the excuse of the Adams defenders is that he had to leave early in order to make his connections. And that may be true.
But, really?
Yeah,
connections
to
what?
Well, I don't know. The ferry someplace north.
Amy Klobuchar leading Donald Trump 43.
Yep.
And Donald Trump 47. And 46, Joe Biden. Why is Klobuchar there?
She's one of the two sort of managers, if you will, on behalf of the Senate. Democrat and a Republican sort of manage things on behalf of the Senate. And
they're getting in the limo together right now.
Exactly.
But I'll tell you what, they're looking kind of grim. This is the first time I haven't seen Trump smile in about 3 weeks. So they both close, but they'll walk together. Famously, I know Truman and Eisenhower got together. There was tension between them.
Tension, yeah.
Didn't say a word to each other.
Truman was not going to bring himself to speak to Dwight Eisenhower, yeah. But normally, look, this is a time for, you know, conversation and reflection.
Yeah, but Carl also, what about Bush 43 never hesitates. He knows this is important to come.
Yeah.
We have Laura Bush, important to come.
Right.
Barack Obama is important to come. Michelle Obama wants no part of it.
None.
She's not hiding it.
No.
So
she has hated politics. I mean, you read her memoir. She did not want her husband to run for the Illinois State Senate, let alone for president of the United States. So, and she has obviously strong feelings about Donald Trump. But I thought it was a mistake not to attend the funeral of Jimmy Carter. I mean, this is You know, it's maybe we give her some leeway on attending a presidential inaugural, but honoring
right.
the man of her party, who was a racial moderate in a time when Southern Democrats were not, did not tend to be racial moderates, and who had was a close ally of so many in the civil rights movement, including Martin Luther King. I thought it was an exceptionally
and
bad move.
By the way, this is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We should cite
yes.
that, too. And now we're watching the limo pull out from the White House. And, of course, for the both presidents in the limos, security is extremely high. We also saw a reverse shot, Carl. And I believe the reverse shot was to see some of the movement going on. One family's in, one family's out. They
yeah.
got 5 hours to do
yeah.
it. And it's amazing.
Yeah, it really is amazing. And particularly what they have to do to change the Oval Office overnight, so that by noon today, when President Trump walks into the Oval Office this afternoon, it will be exactly as he wants it to be.
It's kind of interesting because they're going through what I think is the open stance, correct? You have much
yeah.
better idea of Washington than I do as we sit out here at 101 Constitution overlooking what we thought was going to be a 100,000-person crowd. But
yeah.
we have a – it looks like we got a Steadicam in front of the car. So
yep.
you get a chance to really see from the reverse, from the car that's leading the president.
Yeah.
What do you think they're talking about?
You know, hard to say. But, I mean, you know, this is a moment where it should have been, you know, these men need to say something to each other. I mean, this is a moment where they, you know, I've always thought, for example, in the transfer from Biden, from Trump to Biden, that it was a mistake for Biden not to be more forthcoming and warm about what Trump had done to confront COVID. Operation Warp Speed is one of the great miracles of modern medicine. And if Trump had been on the receiving end of positive comments by Biden, I think the country would have been better off.
Yeah, he would have been better off. If you want people to get shots, you could say your guy came up with it.
Yeah,
yeah, that
oh,
would
yeah.
have helped.
Oh, yeah. No, and in fact, it was a modern miracle. The four presidents in a row, Bush, Obama, mm-hmm. invested billions in fundamental research on how you can make vaccines. Because in 2002, we were still making vaccines the same way we'd been making them in the 1780s, incubating the virus in an egg. And it was enormously expensive and enormously time-consuming and disruptive and slow.
Right.
And so Bush and Obama invested in the basic research. Trump seized on that research. He started Operation Warp right. Speed. And within a matter of months, we had a vaccine being tested. And within less than a year, being shot into people's arms, saving lives.
Right. So, well, I don't think neither side at this point wants to bring up COVID, but
yeah.
we'll be very interesting to see what happens at HHS.
Yeah. Well, and one moment here is that, you know, thank you, President Trump, for Steve Whitehoff and the important effort that you and he played in bringing about the ceasefire in the Middle East. I mean, it did.
He wants no part of that.
Yeah, and I thought it was very churlish of Biden the other day to basically make, you know, dismiss it. But anyway, I'm interested in what the code name is now for the Beast. You know, we colloquially call the White House, the president's limousine, the Beast. But each administration has at least one.
Oh,
code
really?
Name. Yeah. Code name during Bush's era was Stagecoach, which I thought was, you know, sort of Western. My code name was Pilgrim, which is a John Wayne phrase. So there were a lot of Western right. things in it going on during the.
You know what I love? I know people are watching around the world, and they're going to say, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, I think these people are saying, okay, this is in because Trump is such a global figure now. He's not somebody, well, who's the president of the United States? He's probably the most famous person
yeah.
in the world.
Well, we were talking about this earlier. I cannot remember an inauguration in which foreign leaders attended. And we have the president.
They say it hasn't been done.
Yeah, we have the president of Argentina. We have the prime minister of Italy. She's here. You know, normally we have plenty of ambassadors and representatives of countries, but... you know, the Chinese vice president, I'm not certain I'm excited about that, and the Ecuadorian president and the former Georgian president are all here. But, you know, it's unusual. It's a mark of, you know, the excitement of part of the world for changing.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. We're doing it. You know, it's going to be exciting this afternoon. I mean, this is going to be so interesting. My prediction of Trump 1 and Trump 2, the big difference on Trump 2, you're going to see RFK, if he gets through, making a lot of these making the news by making the announcement. You're going to see Defense Secretary Hegseth making news by defending policy and procedure himself. I don't think Trump needs to be on everything. And I think Rubio is so eloquent and so conversive and has got good relationships. Let him talk foreign policy.
Yeah.
So Trump doesn't have to be the front man every time.
Yeah, from your lips to God's ears, because I think the more the president feels like he has to carry everything, the more widespread his voice is, the weaker he is on any given point. Can I say something, though, about what he's going to sign today? You know, we paid a lot of attention to the immigration and DEI and so forth and so on. I think one of the things that's going to have huge consequences for our economy is the rollback of the red tape and regulation that has been dropped on our economy by the Biden administration. This is one of the great successes in Trump's first term in office. And I was looking this morning at the American Action Forum has a terrific website where they've kept track of all of the regulations and the cost of regulations by year. And under Joe Biden, we have had 1,195 new regulations. It is a record for any four-year term. And the cost of those regulations, by the government's own estimate, is $1.9 trillion of additional cost on the economy, including 360 million additional hours of federal government paperwork that we have to fill out our businesses and individuals. And one rule alone in April of last year, the so-called tailpipe emissions, which basically said get rid of cars that use gasoline, do like California, require it, you make the standard so high on emissions that you can't have gasoline-powered
including
cars.
Including trucks.
$870 billion on our auto industry. Now, who pays that? American consumers do. And so what I think we're going to see is this afternoon, lots of signings, and some of them are going to be high-profile, DEI and the border and blah, blah. But this could have an immediate impact on the economy because it will free up our businesses and our entrepreneurs and consumers to not have to spend money otherwise.
And we're watching how many miles is it, do you think, from the White House to the Capitol building? I mean,
it's just a couple of miles.
So they're almost there.
Well, look, here's the motorcade right behind us. There he is, right behind us. We're looking down on the spare.
How great is that?
And then the beast and the vice presidential candidates, and the wives of the president, the presidents themselves, the vice presidential couples, all three limousines with people in them and a spare limousine in front.
And now I know while everyone's on the veranda there in freezing weather taking the video, they knew it was coming down, and there it is. The president zooms by with the current president, and it's soon going to reverse roles. One's going to be former, and one's going to be the new.
You know, you missed your opportunity to go down and put your thumb out and see if you could catch a ride to the west, to the east.
You're right, especially because that's the only way you can get anywhere in this town, if I'm with the president,
because
you can't get anywhere.
Or walk.
Yeah. So they're going to abolish the Green New Deal, what's left of it. They're going to withdraw from the Paris Climate Change. They're going to terminate the electric vehicle mandate, even though Elon Musk is his key advisor. Pause all offshore and wind leases. It's certainly an eyesore and certainly not good for birds. And catch and release. And they got some border actions which are going to be substantial. How about this, Karl Rove? Establish a national priority to eliminate all criminal cartels operating in U.S. soil and give them, create a task force for the protection of homeland and close the border to illegal aliens via proclamation. But they're going to actually look to declare these cartels terrorist organizations, allowing them to move and go into their financial backing to see if they could start oppressing them like they did with Colombia, like they did with Al-Qaeda.
Yeah. Well, an important move. Let's not underestimate the power of the cartels. This is taking on an important issue.
You live in Texas. You know.
Oh, yeah. No, look, it's scary. I mean, it is scary. Why do you think South Texas swung Republican? Two big issues. One was energy. A lot of people in that part of the world are working in the energy industry, and they're saying one political party is coming after my job, and the other one is going to protect it. But the other issue is the border. And the border, one of the most important parts, is the role of the cartels. They now make more money off of trafficking people across the border than they do by importing illegal drugs.
It's called FTO. The designation allows for targeting action against members, including sanctions and financial penalties. It is illegal for anyone to provide support or resources to FTO and financial institutions. So that's going to move. Also, get this. Word is, according to Bill Malusian, who was briefed yesterday, they're going to be moving troops to our border immediately and begin immediate construction of the border wall. Not National Guard, U.S. military.
Well, I'm glad for that because, look, I'm not going to denigrate the National Guard, but the state of Texas is paying something like $11 billion a year for the Texas National Guard to be deployed on the border because Joe Biden refused to give the necessary manpower to close the border. So I'd hope that we didn't, you know, I would rather have, ICE and Border Patrol agents rather than the military, because the military's got a higher function. But why is the state of Texas being forced to pay for the failure of the federal government to control its borders? We're not the federal government.
What made it worse is you being sued for doing it. So legal fees on top of the law enforcement was unbelievable. In fact, they benefited from what they did at Shelby Park, and they stopped it there. And if it was almost the looming election that stopped the lawsuit for you guys doing what you did in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll talk about that. One thing, I'm looking at the still picture. Look at this. Of when they left the White House, Carl. That's the most... It looks like President Trump is the one who is leaving the White House. He does not look happy. Maybe it's just one of those things he's just thinking about what he's got to do. But I wonder if there's a story there we're going to be talking about.
Oh, we'll find out about it if there is. We'll hear two explanations of it.
And what are we seeing now? Both presidents walking into the Capitol building together. They are speaking, it does seem, to each other.
Oh, no. Trump is now talking to Biden. Biden's looking away, but Trump is weighing in.
Hakeem Jeffries put out his hand. And
yeah, good.
They're shaking hands. Klobuchar is leading
Smile on Trump's face now that he's starting to see some other people.
Right.
Well, a little grim.
Chuck Schumer is there.
Back there, a beneficiary of Trump's political largesse back in the old days.
And who's diagonal from the future president?
Joe Biden.
No, it's Kamala Harris.
Oh, I'm sorry. She's back. She's back in the crowd.
So we'll see. It looks like I'm not sure where J.D. Vance would be. The first lady's left first. By the way, Melania Trump. I'm not one to pick out fashion, but the hat was outrageously great. And it's certainly going to make some news.
You and Charlie Hurt are the new fashion experts for Fox. I thought it was spectacular, but I did not believe that my fashionista allowed me to.
I can't get on the E! Channel right now, so there she is. But we just watched Sergey Pinchor and Elon Musk talking to each other, the CEO of Google and the CEO of SpaceX, Tesla, and anything he wants.
Starlink.
Will Nauta is also working in the building. We're seeing that now. We got to take a timeout and come back.
Oh, there's Vance.
There is the vice president, the future vice president of the United States in about 20 minutes, along with his lovely wife, Usha. We're going to come back, and we'll give you all the hits and misses of this historic event. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show with the great Karl Rove. Don't move.
Live from Washington, D.C., for the inauguration of Donald J. Trump, it's Brian Kilmeade. From Constitution Avenue in our nation's capital, for the inauguration of President Donald J. Trump, it's Brian Kilmeade.
And Karl Rove. Karl, it's great to have you here. Half hour, to be able to look at this historic moment. Could you tell everyone what you're seeing in the Capitol and how different it looks? There's Mike Pence, by the way, walking in. That's a classy move to show up.
Yep.
That's awesome. He came in by himself at the end. But it is a bunch of VIPs in there, right?
Yeah. Yes, there's only about 600, I think, seats that are available in the rotunda. So there are no spouses. He's coming as former vice president.
And don't people always lean on you, your constituents, to get him into things like this?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And now they're...
Well, the best thing you can do for him is say, I will get you a seat. There's, I think,
Woody Johnson, owner of the New York Jets.
Yeah, close friend of President Trump's. The best thing you can do is to say, if I can't get you in the rotunda, I'll get you into the visitor center, which has got about 2,600, 3,000 seats there.
Right.
But this is where the swearing in will be in the grand rotunda of the Capitol.
So it's going to be great. I mean, you see that there's Elon Musk, as I mentioned before.
Yeah, next to Woody Johnson.
And Howard Lutnick, who's going to have a key role as economic advisor. There's RFK Jr.
There's Jeff Bezos.
Jeff Bezos is there, and is his future wife.
Lutnick is going to be Commerce Secretary. Am I right?
Yeah, is he Commerce Secretary? Yeah, I think you're right.
I wanted to be gentle in correcting you.
Ever be gentle. We want you to be you. And there's Mark Zuckerberg standing right in front of him. And diagonal back from Zuckerberg is future Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy. Real quick,
who was standing on his tiptoes, incidentally. What was that all about?
I don't know.
A better look there?
I'm not sure. But listen, your thoughts on the preemptive pardons that were handed out today to Mark Milley, 10 seconds?
I was sad that we came to a moment where we felt like that needed to be done. And I agree with Adam Kitzinger. He said, I didn't do anything wrong, and I didn't need a pardon.
Absolutely. Karl Rove, great to see you. I promise the rest of your hits will be indoors.
Thank you. And thanks for the heater.
Brian Kilmeade Show.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
And I believe if I looked at the format correct, that is when I say hello. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this historic moment as the 46th President of the United States arrived about a half hour ago with the new President of the United States, number 47. He'll be official when he puts his hand on the Bible, one that his mom gave him, and another that has historic significance. And he'll be doing that with Chief Justice Roberts as the Supreme Court justices all march themselves in. We had a chance to see Barack Obama walk in by himself, former Vice President Mike Pence walk in by himself. Bill Clinton walked in with Hillary. And everyone is just full of VIPs, powerful personalities, powerful politicians from years past, nominees for his cabinet. You see Pete Hegseth, Scott Bessent, and so many more lined up, Marco Rubio, all interacting. There's a real sense of camaraderie and team amongst them. Remember, Joe Biden met with his cabinet 9 times in 4 years. There was no sense of synergy there. This group is a lot tighter already than they were then. Watching all the festivities in New York while we're in D.C. overlooking the Capitol is Michael Goodwin, New York Post columnist, a great perspective on President Trump, how he's grown from a billionaire businessman to a one-term president to now a two-term president. And he joins us now. Michael, welcome. Your thoughts about the proceedings as we see them so far.
Good morning, Brian. I believe that this is a historic day in so many different ways, and what 132 years since we've had a president who was a president, then lost, and then came back to win. Grover Cleveland, a household name, I'm sure, for many Americans. But I think also the difference, the dramatic contrast between Joe Biden limping off stage and Donald Trump coming in full of ideas and energy and a really young, and I would dare say somewhat of an aggressive cabinet coming in. I mean, the contrast is what really strikes me. I mean, Biden, the failed president, Trump, the successful president, turned out, but now embraced right back because of those successes largely.
And let me just interrupt for a second to give everyone an understanding about what's happening. Hold on a second. We just had the Trump family walk in. It was Ivanka and Don up front, Eric, and then you had Tiffany, and then followed by 6'7" if you want to know how much time has passed, 6'7" Barron Trump. You get to understand how what he was a little kid the first time around. 8 years later, he's got his hair looked back. He looks like a younger version of himself. But Joe Biden limps out, no doubt about it. And word is, Michael, that he's in extremely dark mood still, mad at everybody for throwing him in the scrap heap. I think he should be madder about what his legacy will be as more and more people are going to be shamed into telling the truth of how out of it he was for 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, the lack of self-knowledge here is pretty stunning, and it's frightening when you think about it, actually, Brian, that Joe Biden didn't see what was happening in the country. He didn't realize the failure. His policies were the damage they were doing to people. Remember when he embraced this idea that Bidenomics, which was a put down of it, and he said, and he embraced it, saying it's working. I mean, it's just stuff like that. It's just not just a tone deaf. It's dumb, right? I mean, it's somebody right who doesn't grasp the reality of the country and expects to be rewarded for it.
So we have so they did ride over together. I'll tell you, the first time I mentioned this to Karl Rove, first time I've seen the president not smiling since he won the election was after he left the White House with Joe Biden. So first the first lady's left, the future and former. and the future, yeah, and the soon-to-be former. And then the both presidents got in, and it looks like Trump had that look on his face like he was going into court. So I wonder if there was a story there. The other thing that allows when we go indoors in 85, I'm not sure where you were, that's the last time we were indoors, it allows for more of a procession about who you see and who you see coming in and out. And they're not all bundled up trying to persevere the weather at their older age. But also it's noteworthy, too, Michelle Obama wants no part of this. She is not coming to Jimmy Carter's funeral, and she's not coming to this.
Yeah. I saw something. It may be on the Fox website where she says somebody attributed a quote to her, "I'm no phony." I guess that she just can't stand these people, and therefore she's not going to grace the ceremony with her presence. That's fine. That's fine. Karen Pence, I believe, is not there today as well. She also had some harsh things to say about the Trumps. So that's fine, all of you. If you don't want to be there, that's fine. America will be fine without you. You're the ones who are losing. This country is worth fighting for. It's worth putting up with dumb presidents on occasion. It's worth putting up with a lot of hassles. Of course, we want to try to fix as much as we can, but this country has to go on. It's so important. And if you withdraw your service or your participation in the country, shame on you. But that's fine for the rest of us.
I think I saw somewhere, I'm trying to get in second source, that there are one among his executive orders is going to be to take those 51 intel officials who signed off and said that laptop was Russian disinformation and withdraw their security clearance. And
yeah,
from Leon Panetta on down.
I think it's a no-brainer, Brian. Absolutely, they don't deserve it. I mean, they don't need it. It's really a perk for them that enables them to get television appearances and perhaps book contracts and everything else. They provide no service for it. It would be one thing if they could be called upon for help or advice in some way. But when they misuse that in a partisan way, then, I mean, the security clearance is nonpartisan. They played partisan politics and used that clearance as a way of justifying making themselves important, making it more valuable what they were doing. And it was pure partisan service. And let's not forget, Anthony Blinken arranged that letter. And I think he should lose his security clearance as well.
Nice point. Great point. He went in, and I think Jake Sullivan was behind that, too. And they said, can you do that? Now we're seeing the doors open, and Bill and Hillary Clinton are going to be walked in right now together in step. To their point, I give them credit, too. This must not be easy. Hillary was disassembled by Trump. He was exposed gradually by Trump for the petty person she is. And Bill Clinton, and she's still not over the fact that she lost, still says he's an illegitimate president. And Bill Clinton, President Trump, went right back and exposed everything he was up to and the hypocrite that he was when they tried to attack what they claimed Donald Trump was. Susie Wiles reaches over, talks to Hillary Clinton and to Bill Clinton. You see Dana White standing right with the first family and the future cabinet. This is very interesting. It's going to be fascinating to see the presidents then walk out and then Chief Justice Roberts put their hand on the Bible and get going. But I think everyone should know the ceremony's over almost from the minute the ceremony's over. President Trump is going to be putting out a huge, huge agenda. And if you want to take a look, here's what he promises his first 100 days as George W. Bush and Laura Bush enter. Cut four.
The American people have given us their trust, and in return, we're going to give them the best first day, the biggest first week, and the most extraordinary first 100 days of any presidency in American history. To implement this historic agenda, I've assembled an all-star cabinet of patriots and visionaries and reformers who will fight for America, and together we will win, win, win for America.
And from going after terrorist organizations, declaring the cartels a terrorist organization, to putting the military on the border, to lining up ICE in San Diego and Chicago and possibly New York, because Mayor Adams is here right now. And by the way, they are all the presidents are being introduced one by one in descending order. And Barack Obama and George W. Bush both got big applause. I think it's cool for that. You know, they got to be appreciated for the era in which they were.
Yeah, look, I think it is it's a great tradition to have, I mean, this transfer of power and the people who have been president to come and be part of that, to be witnesses to it. I think it's a wonderful tradition. You know, look, Trump himself did not come, of course, for Biden, for the handover to Biden after January 6th. You know, the fact that maybe Pence's wife stays away or Michelle Obama stays away. I think everybody should come. But if you don't, it's your loss. I mean, I think showing up is part of what people have to do, whether it goes their way or not. That's the beauty of it, is that the losers come and congratulate the winners. You know, it's hard. It's very hard. But it's part of a privilege, too. And I think it's a mistake for them not to come. But at least the former presidents are all here.
So you want to hear the classless dead-end congresswoman from Queens? Congressman AOC said this on Instagram. Push this on Instagram. By the way, the Chief Justices all walked in. Cut to.
All these journalists are like, Congresswoman, are you going to the inauguration? Congresswoman, are you going to the inauguration? Are you going to the inauguration? Let me make myself clear. I don't celebrate rapists. So, no, I'm not going to the inauguration room.
Well, maybe George Stephanopoulos should call her up and tell her what she could be looking at.
Yeah, I think she sounds like she's preparing for a run on The View. Maybe that's her future. I don't think right now she doesn't have much of a future in politics. She's going to be a lone crazy on the sidelines, because I think the Democratic Party is going to look at her as toxic. She is part of the problem. The Democrats are in the wilderness right now. She was, you know, very attractive, young candidate, you know, populist and progressive and all of that. And it's all now burned down. That whole thing, that
she
whole
no,
wing of the party
no,
has been the problem.
She had no other speed. And that's her speed, was to be a radical leftist. And she does not read the room. And our country has moved on from that. Sadly, her district hasn't. So, but in New York, it's moving to the middle. Hopefully, faster than it is right now. But it is a move to the middle to crack down on crime. And I think that's why Mayor Adams went to Mar-a-Lago. I think that's why he met with Bruce Blakeman in Manhasset, Long Island. I think that's why he's in Washington, D.C. today. Said, you know what, the party's about to leave me. The investigations were over the top. And now into the rotunda come the first family, and there's huge applause for them as they come in. So that's interesting. As they all come in, and you see all the CEOs right behind them. So listen, we're going to take a short time out and come out before the president comes back. Michael, any final thoughts about today?
Well, Brian, my one thought is about the pardons that Biden did today, the preemptive pardons with Liz Cheney and the others. I think this, to me, justifies Donald Trump pardoning just about all of the January 6th defendants. I think it's outrageous how Biden has misused the pardon power, and to pardon Liz Cheney and all the staffers on there, Mark Milley, Fauci, that's a misuse. That's an abuse.
Jamie Raskin too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an abuse of the pardon power, and I think it justifies Trump pardoning just about everybody on January 6th. If it's going to be treated in one way, it can't be just a one-way system. I mean, that day ended, and if the Democrats don't understand that, then shame on them. But I think we cannot expect there be two standards of justice. It's got to end, and I would now support pardoning just about everybody on January 6th.
And I look forward to reading that in your column in the New York Post. Michael Goodwin, fantastic of you to join us, offer your insights in this historic moment. As we look at the inauguration of Donald Trump, the 47th president of the United States, which is now probably within 15 minutes of becoming official. Thanks, Michael.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
All right, so from 101 Constitution, this is the Brian Kilmeade Show on the road. When we come back, we could be looking at the 47th president with his hand on the Bible. You'll listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Live from our nation's capital for the inauguration of Donald J. Trump, you're with Brian Kilmeade. Live from Washington, D.C., for the inauguration of Donald J. Trump, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. It's kind of cool. We're getting closer and closer to the inauguration of Donald Trump, where he puts his hand on the Bible and takes the responsibility of running the country fully. Although, Trace Gallagher, you're kind enough to join us before you join your show, Fox News at Night. But before he does that, we got to find out what happened behind the scenes, because they had tea together, then they came out together, they rode in a limo together, and now we're seeing both sides, former presidents, everyone introduced. The place is packed at the Capitol.
And it's amazing to me when they walked in, you know, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton looked very joyful. They looked like they were having fun. Barack Obama walked in, he was smiling at everybody. George W. Bush could not have stopped smiling, and they all looked like they were happy. And then you see other people walk in, might have been at the tea, didn't look as enthused as a lot of the others did. So, yeah, I'm wondering how these went, because they're, you know, on the last day you had the pardons, right, the preemptive pardons of Fauci and so on and so forth, and you had Donald Trump coming out criticizing them, and you had a lot of kind of back and forth, and you would think just hours before the inauguration that there would be a little bit of come together, and it seems like there is kind of this divergent trains of thought that are kind of going their separate ways.
Well, I don't even think you need to look very far to find out that they say Joe Biden's been in an extremely dark mood. It's getting worse every day as this day got closer. And you see that they're not speaking to Nancy Pelosi. And after she broke her hip, he never even picked up the phone to call to see how she was. And Jill Biden making her comments, I think, to USA Today that, you know, it's my friend for 50 years. Believe it at that. So, to tell you the truth, out of all the things Nancy Pelosi's done, she really shouldn't be blamed for this. Everybody, she just did what everyone else was too afraid to do.
Right. Yeah. But at the same time, you have the families coming. You know how deep it goes when you have the families coming out, when you have Pelosi family, and you have somebody in the Biden family that are coming out, and they're taking digs at each other. You know that this is this deep-seated, and they're just now showing it, this disdain for what they did to Joe Biden. In, you know, back in the summer when he had to step out, and there was nobody coming out saying, no, he needs to stay in there, except for maybe Clyburn, South Carolina. Otherwise, you have all these politicians that are like, you know what, maybe it is time. And Nancy Pelosi, I don't think, ever went to the White House and said, here's my reasoning. Here's what I think.
Where you are is going to be the most fascinating state for me, because I'm going to see how California changes after the horrific fires and after this change in leadership that I think people are going to want. And I want to go over that, because I talked to James Woods the other day about this on Saturday night. And he was not an ambassador to Hollywood, but the president has named them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's the whole thing is California, you're right. You can see if it's a pendulum, you know, it's been left for so many years, and you can see it coming back.
Back in a moment. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Washington, D.C., the sight and the sounds of inauguration for the 47th president of the United States. Don't move.
Live from our nation's capital for the inauguration of Donald J. Trump, you're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back. We're at 101 Constitution, overlooking the Capitol building. Or behind me was supposed to be the outdoor ceremony. They've, as we all know, they went indoor, and we're about 15 minutes away, Trace Gallagher, from getting the formal swearing in of the president. During our show, we might get the vice president being sworn in.
Yeah, I mean, half the fun is watching people walk in, right?
Right.
And seeing Chuck Schumer just walked in. You think somebody and there, by the way, that's the man of the hour, the man of the day, the man of the year, Donald Trump walking into the building right now, which is fascinating. He looks resolute, to steal a phrase.
You know, usually they're bundled up. They got the overcoats on. But now it does seem like an indoor reception. And because it is, but it looks like a reception you might see at a wedding, and a glamorous one at that, maybe in Italy with the big podiums. But you hear the crowd begin to applaud as people are getting closer and closer to coming out. Now, that is Melania Trump in the outfit that's going to be talked about forever. It looks phenomenal.
Yeah.
With the hat from perhaps a, I don't know, but I think its sales are going to be booming. Whoever made that hat.
Listen, my wife called me and said, did you see the hat? Did you see Melania? Did you see the hat? And I said, yeah. She goes, that hat is going to go down in history as the hat, the inaugural hat. So good for her. She looks great.
And she decides to sit right next to Barron. And her father is over to the right. She lost her mom last year, and they were extremely tight. And by the way, Donald Trump was extremely tight with Melania's family.
Yeah.
So they were everywhere with them. They're in the Trump Tower. They're in the White House, too.
You know, it's interesting. You look at Melania Trump, and everybody forgets that, you know, back in the day, she was a big-time supermodel. And you look how tall she is.
Barron Actually, is I never forget nine. That she was a supermodel.
Yeah. Barron is 6'9", yeah. Right? And Melania Trump is, I mean, look at her. Maybe she's clearly wearing heels and stuff, but she's tall. She is a tall woman. She's got a great presence. She is decked out. And I think that, you know, I think people have gained a tremendous amount of respect for her over the past 4 years.
I think the Bidens must be happy that this thing is indoors. I mean, they're coming out now. The Hakeem Jeffries is making his way out. And the curtains open up. When they do open up, you see the flag draped behind them. And then it's also, while we see this ceremony, you know, the story up until 12 o'clock Eastern time is going to be the swearing-in ceremony. Starting at 1, it's going to be the executive orders. It's going to be the executive action.
Yep.
And it's going to be maybe a camera on the border. But now, in comes the president.
Yeah, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and literally they've got about 21 minutes to spend together. And then who knows when they'll get back together? I mean, it's a legitimate question. Who knows when they would work together, see each other? I mean, it's anybody's guess, because it's not like they're going to run back. He's going to take off. It's not like they're going to run back to the White House and have one quick last lunch before they go their separate ways. You know, what's she going to do? Is she going to go back to California? Is she going to run for governor? What's Joe Biden going to do?
Right. And of course, that's going to be one of the things you're going to be working on and seeing every day as L.A. looks to get out of the fire. First, put out the fires and then, of course, rehabilitate from the fire. And there's an opportunity, in my view, for a leader to step up. And if she wants to be a leader, she knows exactly where to go. She knows where the power bases is. And she knows no one holds her responsible. But it's a chance to step into the breach, in my view. So, by the way, usually presidents and vice presidents aren't that tight. I mean, Cheney and Bush don't really talk.
Yeah.
Gore and Clinton don't really talk. Pence and Trump don't talk. Something about those offices often divides them.
Yeah. Although Biden and Obama were fairly tight, right, when they were ending. And Biden would constantly praise Obama, constantly say they still talk, constantly say that he still gets advice from him. And so who knows? But, you know, kind of quickly going back to the California thing before we move on here, J.D. Vance, of course, will be the first we'll see. You go back to the California thing, and Kamala Harris could come in as a leader. The problem is, and it's odd to say this, but the problem is she's a Democrat. And in California right now, the Democrats don't seem to be in favor, Brian. I mean, 70% Democrat in California. But right now, Gavin Newsom and Karen Bass are really on the outs with the public. Even those people who are very big Democrats have seen that they've made some mistakes. This was Gavin Newsom's moment to be Rudy Giuliani, to step up, you know, even Cuomo. And he didn't do it and still hasn't done it. And I think it's going to hurt him politically and hurt the party in California politically.
If it doesn't, California has no standards, because he basically said, yeah, this looks really bad. Who's going to do anything about it?
Yeah.
So we just missed the vice president walking in, gets a huge ovation, and he's standing by himself. You see Usha over his left shoulder. And before that, the president and vice president, there's only one guy left, I think, unless I missed something. Only one guy left that needs to be introduced.
You've got the rundown. You see that? Yeah, the next guy is the big guy. He's the main event. And I think it's phenomenal to see this type of comeback. I mean, not to use a sports analogy, but it is absolutely unheard of when you see this type of comeback in anything, much less politics. I mean, he was written off 4 years ago, and now he's back, and he's bigger than ever, and he's more confident than ever, and he's got a grasp of exactly what politically he wants to achieve. He's got a list. He's got, you know, he's got an agenda, and he intends to fulfill as much of it as possible as quickly as he can.
All right, so we're seeing the House leadership walk in, and that's fine. Akeem Jeffries, Steve Scalise, as well as the Speaker of the House, Amy Klobuchar comes in, and Deb Fischer, the ones that ran the inaugural from the left. And we also know that this inaugural committee raised over $150 million.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much money you need to throw a three-week party.
Right, especially when you cut the party in like one-tenth or one-one-hundredth. And you put it inside. Maybe you save yourself some punch, and you save you a lot of cookies and a lot of cheese plates.
But when you look at what the president's got to deal with, I know he's going to handle, I get it, he's got to handle the border. He's always wanted to do that. He's going to handle immigration, hit the cities. But then he's got immediately to deal with the hostage exchange.
Right.
And then he's going to have to deal on Friday, going to Los Angeles and seeing for himself. And then dealing with the fact that he wants to, and a lot of Republicans want to, attach requirements to the aid that's coming your way.
Yeah. And I think it's a good, I mean, listen, if you have years and years of not knowing where this money's going, and in California in particular, spent billions, $25 to $28 billion on homeless programs, and they have no idea where the money went. And though the money is gone, the homeless problem is now worse than it was. So, you know, everything, whether it's Ukraine or Israel or California, we need to know where the money's going.
Donald Trump is in the building. They have an air kiss, Melania and DJT. He's now shaking hands with Joe Biden, explaining pleasantries. He's getting a loud ovation from his future cabinet, from a lot of his supporters, from former presidents, from leaders on both sides of the aisle. If you didn't want to be here, don't show up. But if you did show up, that means you had to earn that ticket. Mm-hmm. You had to keep hold on to it. And you better be a party. This is the time for the country to come together, Democrats, Republican presidents. And for 47, this has got to be the moment that many people thought was never going to happen after January 6th, after five indictments, and then that huge, formidable field on the Republican side when it comes to the debates. And he whittled them all away, battled back, and now he is getting a standing ovation in the Capitol building in the rotunda as he's probably 15 minutes from putting his hand on two Bibles, one of which was the one his mom gave him in 1955.
Right. Yeah, it's phenomenal. We had a guy on last night, Colby Covington, who was a UFC championship fighter, and he was talking about Donald Trump and why these young people have gravitated so much toward him. And what you see now is part of the reason, because he has this kind of aura of confidence now, and these young people really do believe he's a fighter.
All right, so Trace Gallo is going to stay with us a few more minutes. We're going to take a short time out and come back as the formal swearing-in ceremonies are about to begin. You're looking at a special edition of the Brian Kilmeade Show in Washington, D.C., in the Capitol building on 101 Constitution. Don't move.
From Constitution Avenue in our nation's capital, for the inauguration of President Donald J. Trump, it's Brian Kilmeade. Live from our nation's capital for the inauguration of Donald J. Trump, you're with Brian Kilmeade.
Senator Amy Klobuchar is making some comments now leading up to the swearing in of President Trump, but it doesn't stop Joe Biden from making news. This morning we woke up to find out he has preemptive pardons for people like Anthony Fauci and Jamie Raskin and Liz Cheney. And now he's going to be a blanket pardon for his brother James. This is maybe saving him from an investigation into his influence peddling he's been long accused of, that James Comer has really discovered and chronicled in his book that Tony Bobulinski has spoken about. And Trace Gallagher is with us right now. Trace, your thoughts about this?
I mean, listen, some of these things are they just have this odor of mendacity. What was the legal term? What was the judge said? The odor of mendacity. It's one of those things where you're like, come on, why are you preemptively pardoning people who swear they did nothing wrong? Anthony Fauci did not want to be pardoned, swears he did nothing wrong, and yet you pardon him. And it's not like he just pulled it out of thin air. There had to be conversations, and the president had to call some of these people and say, listen, I'm going to do these preemptive pardons. Okay, well, if you have to, then yeah, I mean, it's a mess. His brother? Come on. It just sounds like it is absolutely the pinnacle of preemptive corruption.
Right. We understand, too, if you look back at James, suddenly he wrote a $240,000 check to Joe Biden in 2017 and 2018 for funds linked to an alleged influence peddling. They said it was a loan.
Yeah.
No one bought that, but no one followed up on that. They just weren't interested. Why are you targeting the Biden family? Because they're making millions of dollars and no one can find it, and they don't pay taxes. Usually not a good combination. Also hurts the sanctity of a speech when everything you always say is the rich have to pay their fair share.
Right.
It looks like he wasn't, but it looks like he's going to be saved. So if they unearth some things, Trace, we're going to find out what exactly he did.
And I think what they're doing is they're letting you know that the reason, I mean, some people did follow up on this. We had some House committees that followed up on this, and James Comer did yeoman's work on pulling out some of these documents and showing that, these were, and James Comer, by the way, who was a banker. He was a banker in real life, so he knows the red flags going on here. And he came out. The problem, Brian, is the media would not pick up the story. The media refused to pick this story up, and so it died a very slow death. And the fear now is that now that Trump's in office, the media might have to be forced to pick up some of these leads that were never followed up on by any kind of journalists. We tried to pick it up for a long, long time, but it just started to fizzle, and because the rest of the world ignored it, it kind of just slowly went away. And the fear is that it might slowly come back, and so they're trying to put up a brick wall to make sure that doesn't happen.
Trace, Caroline Leavitt was able to send us over some excerpts from the inaugural address. The president's now probably 10 minutes from delivering. Deb Fisher is delivering her remarks right after Senator Amy Klobuchar did. I like it. It says, I return to the presidency confident and optimistic that we are at the start of a thrilling new era of national success. A tide of change is sweeping the country. Today, I will sign a series of historic executive orders. With these actions, we will begin the complete restoration of America and the revolution of common sense. My message to America today is that it is time for us to once again act with courage, vigor, and the vitality of history's greatest civilization. That is not American carnage.
Right.
That's upbeat.
Yeah, and that the first line is the one, the giveaway. We talked about this before, where he goes into this office with confidence. And I think the last time he went in, he didn't quite know what he was doing. And he relied on a lot of people to give him guidance. And those people who were giving him guidance were politicos. They were kind of pointing people who were very politically oriented in his direction, and they ended up burning him in some capacity, and he's learned a lot. The last time I talked to him back in the fall, he was telling me, you know what, we have picked up a lot of knowledge. We know who's good, we know who's bad, we know who to trust and who not to trust, and that will be the theme of this administration.
So the benediction right now is being given by Cardinal Dolan of New York, was asked to. Also, there'll be one from Frederick Reverend Frank Mann of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn. They'll also have a rabbi and a imam. But and Cardinal Dolan is fascinating. I've seen him interact with Trump, and maybe at the Al Smith dinner, they really get along.
They do.
And he can't be partisan, but when she did not show up for the Al Smith dinner,
right,
a chance to be self-deprecating, a chance to be fun, and she would cut that ridiculous video.
Yeah, and I think if she had it to do over again, she'd show up. I mean, that was one of the keys. It's one of the things where you decided not to go on Joe Rogan and you decided not to show up at the Al Smith dinner, and Trump got the jump on you in the whole McDonald's thing. He got the jump on Joe Biden with the garbage thing. He made big headlines and that people remember to this day, and that Al Smith is so simple, and even Hillary showed up, and Hillary was self-deprecating, and she just came across as being a good sport. And this whole thing where Kamala didn't show up at that, it kind of came across as she's not a very good sport. And if you're not a good sport, who really wants to go have a beer with you? Who
right.
really wants to, you know, to put you in charge of a lot of their lives, their families' lives, and the future of the country?
Well, the problem is if she was in office for 3 years and no one knew her.
Right.
All we knew is the stuff she didn't do.
Yeah. Well, California, she was in office. I mean, for the better part of her adult life, she spent, you know, kind of with Willie Brown and in the San Francisco system. And she kind of came up as the attorney general in California and then the Senate. But the truth is that she was never really public, because when she went public, she would do what she did when she goes public now, which she would make these nonsensical remarks. Mm-hmm. So they tried to cloak her. They tried to cover her in California as much as they could. And, you know, she kind of made her way to the top. She got moved up to the top, and then she had to come out, at least to a certain extent, the past 4 years. And it didn't come across well.
It didn't come across well. I would happen to be there that night, and no one could believe the video was even worse than her no-show. It was just showed a cluelessness with her staff. And I'm just struck by the fact that I'm watching some of the Sunday shows yesterday. We were so busy, it was hard to sit down and really. But all the panels were like, who's responsible for covering up the cognitive decline of President Biden?
Right.
And the blaming, the anger that had, was taking place within the Democratic Party, and the anger they have towards him for staying on, for not talking much in the end, not showing leadership out the door.
And the New York Times coming out with a piece saying, oh, well, there were a handful of people that were in charge of making sure that Joe Biden was handled properly. And you think, now you're coming out?
I know.
Now you're coming out with this. Yeah, great time. Great time to come up with it now. We should have known this. We should have known this a long time ago, but they hid. Joe Biden started out in the basement at the beginning of the campaign. He ended up in the basement. He seldom addressed the media in the last year of office. And there's a reason that he seldom addressed the media, because he was really incapable of being quick on his feet. And I have no idea what he is suffering, but he's clearly not the Joe Biden that he was 4, 5, even 8 years ago.
Franklin Graham is now making his remarks now and had some people laughing. Cardinal Dolan gave the vice president nominee-elect a big handshake, and then he had a smile. He's always one for a quick quip. And soon the swearing-in is going to begin, and then the speech is going to be given. And I think the nerves that might have taken place 4, 8 years ago, it's just, I can't be there with Trump. He just addressed 20,000 people yesterday.
Right.
So, and he knows most of these people there not only accept him, they like him.
Right.
So, and it's not the outdoor, it's not the elements. And I think that we have the idea that you could talk about a golden age. What I hope, Trace, is no more saying America's in decline. I don't want to hear that anymore. Let's move forward, address the problems, but solve the problems.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think he's very confident going in. I think he is trusting of the people he's put around himself, and he wants to fast-track this thing, and here we go.
Who do we see you on with tonight?
We're on 2 hours, 11 to 1 tonight. We've got everybody.
Gotcha. On. Trace Gallagher, thanks so much. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Join Fox's support of families impacted by the California wildfires. Your donation enables the Red Cross to respond to and help people recover from this disaster. Visit go.fox/Red Cross to support these efforts.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.